The actual presentation of the how this view is the view of selflessness of persons and selflessness of phenomena are developed sequentially. So with regard to the beings, there are the six types of beings. There are those of the ordinary beings and the noble beings. It's on page 254. The actual identification of persons, or commenting on the meaning of a sutra is quoted. The so-called self is a fiendish mind, and you have come to hold this view. The composition like gates empty are empty. There is no sentient beings. And then the next verse. The first verse, I think, is self and the persons, that ultimately persons do not exist. The first line says that the apprehension of the self, a person, is a fiendish mind. And the second one says that those who apprehend in this manner are under the power of bad views. And the third and fourth say the aggregates are empty of self or persons. The second verse indicates, just as based on collections of parts, people speak of chariot, likewise independence and aggregates. Conventionally, they say sentient beings. So this verse indicates that persons exist conventionally, more specifically the first and second lines, present and analogy, and the last two connected to the meaning, indicating that persons are merely imputed to the aggregates. The sutra passage is saying that the collection of aggregates is the basis of imputation of a person, and the basis of imputation is not admissible as the imputed phenomenon. The collection of aggregates must be understood as both the collection of aggregates at the given moment and the collection of aggregates of earlier and later ones. Therefore, it is inadmissible to posit the continuum of the collection of aggregates as person. When the collection is posited as the basis of imputation, that which is collected is also posited as the basis of imputation, and therefore it is unreasonable for both to be the person. In the commentary on the Middle Way says, the sutra say that since it depends on aggregates, the mere collection of aggregates is not the self. The teacher says the aggregates are the self. If that's why you posit the aggregates are the self, it only refutes that the self is not the aggregates. Therefore, other sutras make statements like form is not self. Therefore, even the statement, the view of I and mind by some ascetics or Brahmins is only a view of these five aggregates, refutes by means of word only that a self that is a different entity from the aggregates exists in as the observed object of one's innate apprehension of an I. So the mere I shows, the term mere I shows that the I is merely imputed and that there's no intrinsically existing I. That having been refuted, however, the aggregates. So when certain philosophical schools posit this from amongst the aggregates, the sixth the consciousness to be the identity of the person, then they are not able to posit the mere I as being existent by imputation. If they were that. Therefore, the meaning of the sutra statement about viewing the aggregates must be explained as referring to the observing self that is not imputed to the aggregates. So as I explained before, first have a good understanding of the gross selflessness, as Jitin Shirovsinki leads in his tradition, and then leading the disciple into the subtle selflessness. So that is why you should differentiate between the statements that the mere I refer to as the self. Conventionally exist and statements that an inherently established person referred to as the self does not exist even conventionally. Still, you should not say that this system asserts the self of persons to be conventionally existent. Such an identification of person is a distinguishing feature of this unsurpassed system. Ascertaining this is well an This well is an excellent means of realizing the uncommon selflessness of persons. Setting persons as not inherently existent. Setting that the I does not exist inherently. The first of the four essential points that exists with regard to this is to examine one's own mind so as to identify the manner of apprehending a self of a person. That was explained earlier. And the second is the decision that if the person is inherently established, it must be established as either one entity with or different from the aggregates, and that there is no means of establishment other than these two. So if the self and aggregates were to exist ultimately, and then there should the appearance and reality should be compatible, whereas they are not. In general, it is established through the experience that when you determine something to be accompanied, thinking something like partner and pillar, you eliminate that it is unaccompanied, and when you determine something to be unaccompanied, thinking something like pot, you eliminate that it is accompanied. A third alternative, something that is neither one nor many, does therefore not exist. So consequently, you are made to ascertain that to be neither one entity nor different entities is also impossible. The third is to see the damage to the position that the two, the person and the aggregates, are one inherently established entity. The fourth is to see well the damage to the position that the two are established as inherently different. Then, when the four are complete in that manner, the pure view realizing the suchness that is the selfness of persons is born from that. In this regard, if the self and the aggregates were one inherently established entity, there would be three faults doing damage to this position. It would be pointless to assert a self. If the sameness of entity and two, the entity of the two were inherently established, there would be a permanently indivisible one. This is because if their sameness of entity were ultimately established, then whatever mind those two who are those two appeared to, they would necessarily not appear to be different. There's a reason for this is that, although among falsities, conventions, it is not contradictory for the mode of appearance and the mode of subsistence to be discordant. Those who are necessarily contradictory in something established as true because those two are necessarily contradictory in something established as true because something truly established that appears to a mind must appear just the way it is. The assertion of a self established through this entity is for the sake of establishing an agent who discards and adopts aggregates, because if he were one with the aggregates, this would be impossible. This is also set forth in the root text on wisdom. A fundamental treatise of the middle way. Once you understand that apart from the appropriated aggregates, there is no self, the appropriated aggregates themselves can only be the self. That self of yours does not exist. The self would be many. And the second fault is the self would be many. There would be a fault. The fault that if the self were established as one with the aggregates, then just as one person has many aggregates, so one person would also have many selves. And just as there is no more than oneself, so the aggregates would only be one. In the commentary on the Middle Way, it says the aggregates are many. If they were the self, therefore there would also be many selves. And then the self would arise and disintegrate. In the root text on wisdom, it says, if the aggregates were the self, it would arise and disintegrate. Just as the aggregates arise and disintegrate, so the self would also arise and disintegrate, because the two would be one. And then you may think, it is asserted that the self of a person arises and disintegrates each moment. There is no fault in merely asserting this conventionally. However, an opponent who asserts that persons are established by way of their own character thereby necessarily asserts that persons arise and disintegrate inherently. In this regard, the explanation of Chandrakirti's commentary on the Middle Way sets forth the three faults. The first one is set forth in the commentary on the Middle Way. Things distinct by their character included in one continuum do not make sense. With Respect to something earlier and something later established as distinct by way of their own entities, a relationship of dependence between what is later and what is earlier is inadmissible. Since they are established with their own power as capable of setting themselves up, they cannot depend on anything else. If a single continuum is therefore inadmissible, the memory of former lives, that life, at that time, I was such and such. Does not make sense. It is with it is like with Devadatta when he remembers a former life. He does not remember I was Yajnadatta, whose continuum is distinct from his. So let's move on to Lamrim Chemo. Oh, do English. No, So Lamrim Chemo. So how a person appears like an illusion based on that refutation. Illusion is said to have two meanings. The statements that the ultimate truth is like an illusion, for instance, mean that although it is such as merely existent, its true existence is negated. Statements that form and such are illusions mean that what appears as form, while being empty of intrinsic existence, is like an illusion. It is the latter of these that I am concerned with here. The latter also carries the meaning of illusion in the former sense. It is not always certain that the former usage carries the meaning of illusion in its latter sense. How do you establish this latter sense of illusion? You use two kinds of awareness, one that apprehends an appearance and one that ascertains emptiness, for example. How can you know that an appearance of a horse or elephant is an illusory or false appearance? You need both a visual consciousness that sees an illusory horse or elephant and a mental consciousness that knows that the horse or elephant does not exist as it appears. Likewise, to be certain that the person, for instance, is an illusory or false appearance, you need both the undeniable appearance of the person to a conventional consciousness and the ascertainment by reasoned knowledge that the person is empty of essential or intrinsic existence. Reasoned knowledge does not establish that the appearance exists, while conventional valid cognition does not establish that it is empty of intrinsic existence. So the seventh Dalai Lama, in his song of the view, the four mindfulnesses, which has actually, the tradition has come from Master Tsongkhapa, at the crossroad of the sensory, the six perceptions, there is this illusory, the dualistic appearance, which has no ground, the groundless. So things appear to us as if they have some objective existence, but when you actually examine whether they exist in that way, then you actually come to the conclusion that it's mere name and nothing exists apart from that. But to us, this does not appear to be the case. It appears as if the objects themselves exist by way of their own power or objectively. And there is a spectacle of illusion. Do not regard it to be true, but look at the nature of emptiness. So in Dzogchen, there is this term Shimitsatil, which means without ground, utterly, without root. So what that means that there is nothing objectively existing. So consequently, you need to need both reasoned knowledge that searches to see whether things intrinsically exist and conventional awareness that apprehends forms and such an existent. So while some say that there are many ways to make form appear as like an illusion, it is unnecessary to exert yourself at techniques for generating such force. Such appearances spontaneously present themselves to the conventional consciousness that appear apprehend those forms, analyzing them too often with reasoning that examines whether they intrinsically exist and develop a strong certainty that intrinsic existence is refuted. Then, when you see an appearance arise, it appears like an illusion. There is no separate way to set up an illusion like emptiness. Earlier teachers used the term space like emptiness. Earlier teachers used the space like an emptiness to refer to an emptiness that is the mere elimination by reason to knowledge of intrinsic production, cessation, and so forth in the appearing subject. They used the term illusion like emptiness to refer to the subsequent appearance of forms and such which appear to be intrinsically existent while being known as actually empty of intrinsic existence. Thus, even when you are engaged in the behavioral aspect of the practice, prostration, circumambulation, reciting, you should first use the reason to analyze whether those practices intrinsically exist. Refute the intrinsic. So whatever Daiti Yoga practice we do, we have to first check whether things have any intrinsic existence or not. And we always, in the beginning of the Daiti Yoga practice, there always this mantra, Om Sarvabhava, Shuddha Sarvadhamma Sarvabhava, Shuddha Sarvabhava Hum. In some texts, this verse, this phrase in Sanskrit is even said in Tibetan. So when we recite this, the Sanskrit, of course it doesn't give us any sense without understanding. So you have to use the words or phrases whichever gives you a good understanding of emptiness, and then bring up this understanding within yourself, and thereby withdraw all the different multiplicity of appearances. And so whatever practices you do, religious practices such as prostration and make offerings and so forth, then you should also use these phrases and words that give you some understanding of emptiness. Of course, sometimes when you use the same word again and again, it's almost like the edge of the knife becoming blunt. So you have to use many different reasonings to make your understanding fresh. So in the 400 verses of Aryadeva, there is a whatever is dependent. So in the root verses of Nagarjuna, whatever is dependent on origination is empty, and that is said to be designated, that is the middle way. And so you can write these verses on small pieces of paper, and then so these two verses from the root verses of the fundamental treatise of the middle way, whatever is empty, dependently arisen, is said to be empty and so forth. And there is nothing which is so when you use these verses, it should give you a very strong emotional experience as well. So when you use the Sanskrit, it doesn't really give you any feeling, because we are not used to Sanskrit. And then we all say the Lama Cherpa prayer. We use in Lama Cherpa there is the indivisibility of bliss and emptiness. But this is a very short phrase. So even if you are not able to become certain about emptiness, but you should bring up some kind of idea in your mind what emptiness means. Try to gain that kind of understanding. And so with regard to bliss also, you should have some understanding of it, what it means. And then you, when you see the inseparable bliss and emptiness from the sky of this, and so forth in Lama Cherpa, then it will actually give you some experience, some feeling or sensation. And otherwise, without having this understanding, you will not have that. So when you come across these powerful statements in the Madhyamaka text, you should try to note them and write them down in notebooks, and then you should actually go over them and think about emptiness. And when you recite mantras, you should use them to bring up understanding of emptiness. So although these texts are, these verses are there in the classic text, but they remain there without, if we do not actually extract them from the text. In the past, Teogyopen Rinpoche has actually done that. He has written down, extracted these passages from the writings of Master Tsongkhapa, the passages on referring to emptiness, a view of emptiness. And so he gave me those notes that he made. And so we should actually use this, do that, and the taking or extracting these passages, which actually give you some kind of a feeling for emptiness. So I wish to say this. So, persuading and analyzing and refute the intrinsic number by engaging in those practices under the sway of certainty that the practices do not intrinsically exist, you learn to raise illusion-like appearance and to do those practices within that appearance. Even if you understand this vital point, you will have a solid understanding of. So there is this appearance of the appearance of the things. And when you say if that things do not actually have that way, the way do not exist the way they appear to us, then you would have this feeling that if in that case nothing would exist. So there you have. Therefore, the Savatantrika Madhyamaka say that there is no regarding the object of negation. They say that it is something which is an appearance. So it is the something which exists without being appearing to the valid cognition. As if it has some exists from its own side, without being posited or established by a valid cognition. But things have no existence the way they appear to. So you would actually confirm that how the things appear to you, to have some kind of a solidity in them, is the object of negation. So in certain guided instructions on the view of emptiness, there are certain instructions which seem to be very befitting for beginner level practitioners, but we have to actually see whether such an instruction actually helps to overcome or negate this the true existence of the person or things as such. So it may, those instructions may be able to do away with or negate the substantially existent I or person, but not the subtle one. So So how the force of having cultivated the space like emptiness in meditative equipoise gives rise to an illusion like emptiness in the post-equipoise state. Also, as explained above, if you fail to limit the above object of negation, the object of negation, when you use reason to investigate whether the self and the aggregates are one, different, or, and so forth, then when you see the argument that contradicts those positions, so with regard to an earlier statement where it says that whether things exist the way they are actually posited by our they are constructed by our distorted views. Regarding that point, I met one scientist, a psychiatrist, Sir Aaron Beck, who told me that when we become angry at somebody, the person whom we are angry at appears to be ugly, totally negative. But he said that 90% of that is our own mental projection. So this is actually what is exactly said in our text here when we talk about how distorted views or the incorrect perceptions project things. So he is not a religious practitioner at all. But for us also, when we become when something is attractive or beautiful, the object appears to be beautiful 100%. And when we are averse to somebody at somebody, then that object becomes totally negative. But that's not the way that things are. In quantum physics also, when they search for the things, the matter and physical things, and go deeper and deeper into it, they've come to a point where they've become difficult to actually posit something that is matter or physical. So through the Madhyamika view, we can say that because these things have effect or they have influence on us or in the environment and so forth, therefore, there is no denying their existence. And the way they exist, therefore, is none other than by mere designation. So things such as persons are non-thing also, as explained above, if you fail to limit the object of negation when you use reason to investigate whether the self and the aggregates are one, different, and so forth, then when you see the arguments that contradict those positions, you will think persons and such do not exist at all. Or things such as persons are nothing, empty of all function, like the horns of rabbits and such. This is a nihilistic view. Therefore, you should be aware of that, aware that this is a point where you may slip with regard to the correct view. Ayadeva 400 stanzas say, if this were so, then how could it be said that existence is like an illusion? Chandrakirti's commentary on the 400 stanzas comment, when you see dependent arisings as they are like creations of a magician, not like the son of a barren woman, Huam. Because this analysis completely refutes production, it teaches that compounded phenomena are not produced. Reply, if that were so, then they would not be like illusion. If you could comprehend things with examples, such as the son of a barren woman, then it would follow that dependent arisings do not exist. I am wary of this, so I do not make that comparison. Rather, I compare them to illusion, and such examples do not. So because there are cases where emptiness and the illusion-like things to be truly existent, this is said. Thus, there would be a fallacy if the reason knowledge that searches to see whether things physically exist were to apprehend that mere illusion exists, yet you definitely must develop in place of intrinsic existence that is refuted under international analysis an apprehension of the existence of things that are mere illusory, so there is the fallacy. Some regarding the target of the object of negation. Some are partially recognize it. So there is no fallacy for Chandrakirti's commentary on the 400 verses say that an illusory object must be left as a remainder. So when you analyze in this way, things are not established as intrinsically existent, hence the illusoriness of individual things is left as a remainder. When you refute the essential and or intrinsic existence of a seedling, as long as the effectiveness of the reasoning does not deteriorate, reason analyzes. So when you use the reasoning of dependent origination, then it is very powerful. The sevenfold reasoning and the fivefold reasoning and the reasoning of lack and one and many and so forth seem to negate or to establish the empty side of so according to Gongdan Tenpe Drama, then Del dependently arising. So ten here dependence shows that the things are not contradictory to saying that they are empty, which means that they do not have any independent existence. And then Jung, or arising, shows that things actually have some effect and influence. There is good and bad, the agent and the action, and so forth. So the conventionality is not rejected. It's shown by that. So as long as reason analysis analyzes whether intrinsic is tenable, you do not develop an apprehension of the seedling as intrinsically existent. However, if you think that the seedling's lack of intrinsic existence is truly existent, or that the illusion-like appearance of that which is material of intrinsic existence itself is truly existent, this is misapprehension that you must refute using the reasoning. Some think that beyond this, even the apprehension of illusory as existent involves and beyond this, even the apprehension of the illusory as existent involves clinging to the apprehension of illusoriness and thus must eliminate, be eliminated. Pay no heed to this notion or else you will incur a great fallacy, namely that any certainty about dependent arising would be impossible. I have already explained this several times. This is undoubtedly a case of failing to distinguish between the existence of the illusory object and the true existence of the illusory object. So the song is reading the verses on page 303. And then after that, those verses, thus, even though reason does not find person, the person who makes the passage at birth and death, virtuous and non-virtuous effects to occur among illusion-like do occur among illusion-like phenomena. So you should be certain of what that sutra says, that those who have done actions will not fail to contact or experience their effects and will not encounter the effects of actions they did not do, those effects being felt or experienced by the other persons who did those actions. Seek this assurance in the following manner. As previously explained, form a clear concept of the object that reason will be refuting. Reflecting carefully, you must identify the intrinsically existent person as it is imputed by the ignorance in your mind stream. Then focus on how, if there was such an intrinsically existing person, it could only be one or different from its aggregates, and how reason contradicts both those positions. Develop certainty in seeing this critique. Finally, solidify your certainty that the person does not even slightly exist intrinsically. In the face of meditating on emptiness, practice this often. This then bring to mind the conventional person who is undeniably apparent. Turn your mind to dependent arising, wherein that person is posited as the accumulator of karma and the experiencer of the effects, and be certain of how dependent arising is possible without intrinsic existence. When they seem contradictory, think about how they are not contradictory, taking an example such as a reflection. A reflection of a face is undeniable, a conjunction of one being an empty, being empty of eyes, ears, and such that appear therein, and two, being produced in dependence upon mirror and a face while disintegrating. When certain of these conditions are gone. Likewise, the person lacks even a particle of intrinsic nature, but is the accumulator of karma and the experience of effect, and is produced in dependence upon earlier karma and afflictions. It is not a contradiction. Practice this thought and understand that it is like this in all such cases. Quam, the certainty that reflection and search are empty of what appears constitutes knowledge that they lack true intrinsic existence. If so, then the perceptions of ordinary beings would constitute knowledge of emptiness. Hence, they would be noble beings. If not, then how can reflections work as examples of the lack of intrinsic existence in those persons and such? If you have to use a reason that proves the absence of intrinsic existence even to understand the examples, then there would have to be an endless regression when you examine issues such as what to posit examples of those examples. By reply by an earlier scholar, although ordinary beings have perceptual knowledge that reflection and such lack intrinsic existence, they are not noble beings because they only know the emptiness of a limited subject. In order to become a noble being, one must have perceptual knowledge of that. All perceptual knowledge that all phenomena lack in intrinsic existence. Opposition, that reply is not right because Aryadevaspoor understands to say that one who knows the emptiness, the lack of intrinsic existence of one thing can know the emptiness of all phenomena. Who sees one thing is said to see everything. The emptiness of one thing is the emptiness of everything. Therefore, someone who knows that a reflection is empty of being a face does not apprehend it as truly being a face, yet does apprehend it as a truly existent reflection. What contradiction is there in that? When young, pre-verbal children see reflections of their faces, they play with them and so forth. Hence, they do apprehend them as truly being faces. Older, verbal persons are certain that insofar as those reflections are not faces, they are empty of being faces. Yet they are apprehended as intrinsically existent. Those very reflections that appear to be faces, that apprehension is a conception of true existence. Experience in our own mind streams proves that this is how we see reflections. Nevertheless, reflections and so forth are appropriate examples for the lack of intrinsic existence. Why we use those examples? Because perception establishes that they are empty of the entity they appear to be, and thus they are not really what they appear to be. When valid cognition establishes this emptiness of really being what it appears in relation to seedlings and such, then it knows the seedling's lack of intrinsic existence. In this way, seedlings and such are indifferent from reflections and such. Shantaketa's commentary on the Middle Way says, just as things such as spots do not exist in reality, yet do exist in terms of what is familiar to the world. As an example of lack of intrinsic existence, he states things such as spots to the advocates of intrinsic existence. Yet, as in the case of reflection and such, he refers to a limited emptiness and not to the lack of intrinsic nature. This is because, as explained previously, many proofs of the lack of existence is used chariots and such as examples. Similarly, in the case of a magician's illusion, the spectres apprehended it truly being a horse or an elephant. The magician's knowledge that the horse or elephant is false is knowledge of a limited emptiness. This page 307, the example illustrates how the person is established under various names. Mm. When a cherry is imputed, it depends upon things such as wheels. Those parts are the appropriated, and the chariot is the appropriator. Likewise, when a self is imputed and depends upon five the six constitutions and the sources, they are the appropriator, and the self is the appropriator also. Just as chariot and parts are posited as agents and objects, the self is the agent because it takes up the aggregates and so forth. The aggregates and so forth are the objects because they are what it adopts. Chandrakirti's commentary on the Middle Way says, likewise, in terms of what is familiar in the world, the self is held to be the appropriator. It depends on the aggregates, constitutions, six sources, the appropriated are the objects, and the self is the agent. Also, as in the case of the chariot, when you analyze reality, a self is not found in any of the seven ways. Thus, while it lacks even the slightest trace of intrinsic existence without analysis, it does exist conventionally. Teaching what the self owns is also thereby established lacking intrinsic existence. When reason searches to see whether the self intrinsically exists, it does not find it in any of the seven ways. Thus, when it has negated the intrinsic existence of the self, how could reason find the I that belongs to the self, etc.? God knows what the self owns also lacks intrinsic existence. When yogis do not see any intrinsic existence in either the self or what the self owns, then they are liberated from cyclic existence. I will explain this below. Nagarjuna's fundamental sutta says, if the self does not exist, how could there be something owned by the self? Chandrakirti's commentary on this says, since objects do not exist without agents, what itself owns does not exist without the self. Therefore, yogis are liberated through seeing that the self and what it owns is empty. On the strength of knowing the self lacks intrinsic existence, you understand that what the self owns also lacks intrinsic existence. You should be able to understand it at this point and how to eliminate qualms about this point based on what I have said above. Next chapter. How to apply those lines of reason to other phenomena. Those arguments to apply also apply to other things. Just as the analysis of self and aggregates follow the pattern of the analysis of the chariot, you should realize that this also is also the case with things like pots and cloth. When reasoning that searches for intrinsic nature searches in the seven ways by analyzing whether parts and such are one or with or different from these forms, etc., they are not found in those seven ways in terms of either of the two truths. Instead, they are posited from the perspective of a non-analytical conventional consciousness. This is because the Buddha takes positions without using reason to refute what the world knows, as is demonstrated by his statement in the chapter teaching the three vows. The world debates with me, I do not debate with the world. Whatever is held in the world to exist and not to exist, I also hold as such. Accordingly, Chandrakirti's Madhyamaka Avatara says, whatever it is, pot, cloth, tent, armies, and so forth, such things, you should know the conventions used by these worldly beings. Why? Because the master of sages does not debate with the world. Part, quality, attachment, defined, getting, feel, etc., as well as whole, qualified, attached person, fire, etc., these objects do not exist in the seven ways under the analysis. Like that applied to the chariot. On the other hand, they do exist in terms of what is familiar to the world. Whatever they may be, the conventions used by these worldly beings should be known only as existent without analysis. What are those conventions? This. Page 311, how to determine that there is no self in phenomena. So, however, Chandrakirti's commentary on the Middle Way determines that things lack intrinsic by referring to four possible types of production. So, when you check things, whether things have intrinsically existing cause, you use this. And then when you check whether things have any intrinsic identity or nature, you use the one, the reason of one and lack of one and many. There's no sense in which anything has ever been produced either from itself, from something else, from both, or without a cause. This means, in part, no internal or external thing is ever in any way produced from itself. The three other theses can be constructed in the same way. So reductio ad absurdum arguments will refute the claim that something can be produced from itself. Thus, these theses do not offer probative examples or reasons, but offer a retreating of the contrary positions. Here, if something is intrinsically produced, it is limited to two possibilities. Either it relies upon cause, or it does not rely upon cause. Hence, if it relies upon cause, the cause and the effects are limited to two possibilities. They are either intrinsically one or intrinsically different. Production in which cause and effect are intrinsically one is called production from self. Production in which those cause and effect are intrinsically different is called production from another. Production that relies upon a cause is certain to be either production from self or production from another, which can be considered individually, or else to be production from both self and other in combination. Individually, there are two cases, production from self and production from other. Therefore, this is how we rule out the possibility while refuting just four possibilities, possible types of production. Refutation of production from self. If a seedling were produced from itself, its production would be pointless, because the production means that what is produced, it has come into being. If it were produced from itself, a seedling would already have come into being, as in the case of a seedling that is clearly manifest. Production also would be endless, because if an already arisen seed were to arise again, the very same seed would have to arise repeatedly. In that case, there is the fallacy that since the seed itself is arising continuously, there's never a chance for the production of seedlings and such. Nagarjuna's fundamental tutor says, if cause and effect were the same, then the production and producer would be the same. So when you talk about an other, after having actually sought the thing in its designated object, then it should be an independently existing cause or an effect, which is not an effect which is not dependent on a cause as such. In the Chandrakirti's commentary on the Middle Way says there is an advantage. There is no advantage in its arising from itself. There is no reason for something which has been produced to be produced again. If you suppose that something already produced is produced again, then the production of seedlings and such would be found in this world, would not be found. So, objection on page 313 and the reply. This has been shown to be a contradiction. Chandrakirti's explanation of the Middle Way commentary states this clearly. Just the productive rice seed is another, other than the rice seedling, which is its effect, so it is that such things as fire, charcoal, and barley seed, which do not produce it, are also other than that seedling. Yet, just as a rice seedling arises from a rice seed, which is other, it would also arise from fire, charcoal, barley seed, etc. And just as from rice seed these arise, there arises a rice seedling, which is other, so things like pots and cloth would also arise from rice seed, yet you never see this. Hence, this is not the case. Thus, the assertion by the earlier Tibetans that logical entailments are proven by a multitude of isolated cases. It's not what Chandrakirti holds. I explained arguments contradicting that claim above in the section on the refutation of the position that it is not established that in a kitchen the mere presence of smoke entails the mere presence of fire. Nagarjuna's Metal Minister says if a cause and effect were other than causes and non-causes would be just alike. Chandigarh's commentary on the middle way says, if things arose in dependence of what is other, then thick darkness would arise even from a flame. Everything would arise from everything. Why? Because in being other, all of the non-producers of something would be just like its producers. You cannot answer such reductio arguments by distinguishing what produces something from what does not in terms such as whether something is induced within the same continuum with effect. For, as explained above, if things are other than in the sense of being intrinsically different, their inclusion within the same continuum cannot be established. Also, it is inadequate to reply that we can see definitely regularity as to what produces a certain effect and what does not. This is because what we are now analyzing is whether such regularity could hold up if the difference between the cause and its effect was essential to be objects themselves rather than being posited by the mind. Refutation of production from both self and another. Advocates of production from both self and another claim that the production of a clay pot from clay is production from self and the production of clay by pot by a potter, etc., is production from another. Even among Buddhists, there are those who advocate production from both as follows. Since Devadatta takes birth in other lifetimes only by way of his life essence, Devadatta and his life essence are one. Therefore, he is produced from self. At the same time, Devadatta is being produced from his parents and from his virtuous and non-virtuous karmas constitutes production from other. Since there is neither production from self alone nor production from another alone, there is no production from the two together. The same arguments given above refute this. But given within production from both, the factor of production from self is refuted by arguments that refute productions from self, and the factor of production from another is refuted by the arguments that refute production from another. Chandrakirti's Madhyamakavatara says production from both is also unreasonable. Why? Because the fallacy is already explained threefold. Because a production from both together exists neither in terms of the world nor in terms of reality. Because individually, production from self and from another are not established. Refutation from causeless productions, lokayatha, proponents of spontaneous origination argue that the production of things is only a matter of spontaneous origination. For no one is seen working to make lotus roots rough or to make lotus leaves soft, nor is anyone seen catching peacocks and such so as to put on their shapes and colors. This is incorrect, for if production were costless, then production such as exists at one place and time would have to exist at all time, place, and also, or else must never exist anywhere. So we'll move to the middle-length lamrim. So there is a separate outline on the dependent origination, the reason of dependent origination. Showing how independent the persons appear, setting that mind does not exist inherently. When you have thus sought with reasoning, page 259, whether the self does or does not have inherent establishment, you negate the inherent existence of the self by means of your failure to find it as either one or many. Just like, for example, when you do not observe a bad woman's son, you will not observe his mind, such as his eyes. In the root version of wisdom, it says, if the eye does not exist, how possibly could mind exist? And the commentary on the middle way says, since without an agent, no action exists, therefore there is no mind without a self. Therefore, by seeing the eye and mind as empty, the yogi is completely liberated. Thus, those reasoning settled that the eye or of one's own continuum, apprehending, thinking, I or the self or the person does not exist by way of its own entity. Through them, you should also realize the entire meaning of the suchness, which is the substance of persons, that all persons from hell beings through Buddha and all their mind are not inherently established as one entity with or different entity from those bases of designation. They are contaminated or uncontaminated aggregates. Through those reasonings, you should also know how all the mind is likewise established as without inherent existence. Showing how independence on dead persons appear like an illusion, indicating the meaning of saying like an illusion, and then mistaken manner of appearing like an illusion. The king of the material civilizations says, like a mirage, a Gandharva city, like an illusion, just a dream, nurtured on signs of empty or of entity, know all phenomena is like that. In the mother of the victors, it is also thought that all phenomena formed through exalted knowers of all aspects of mind, like illusion and dreams. There are two meanings of being like an illusion. From among these two, here is it is the later. For this, the two appearing as that and the empty of existing, the way it appears are necessary. However, if an object is utterly non-existent, even as a mere appearance, just. Like the horn of a rabbit or the son of a barren woman, and does not dawn as empty of existing in the way it appears. Hence, this is how you understand that phenomena as resembling the example of illusion. For example, although the illusion conjured by the magician are from the start empty of being horses and elephants, the appearances of horses and elephants undeniably arise. Understand that likewise, although phenomena such as persons are from the start empty of being established by way of their own entities on top of the object, it is undeniable that they appear as if established that way. That being so, their appearance as God, humans, and so forth are posited as persons, and the objects that appear as form, sound, and so forth are posited as phenomena. Therefore, although persons and phenomena do not have even a mere particle of existence, inherent existence established by way of their own character, the accumulators of karma and so forth, the actions of seeing and hearing and so forth, all the interdependent actions and agents are valid. All actions and agents are valid. Therefore, their emptiness is not nihilistic, since phenomena have primordially always been empty like that and are merely understood as empty. It is not mentally fabricated emptiness either, and since all objects of knowledge are asserted in this manner, it is not like a limited emptiness either. That is why, through being meditated on, it becomes the antidote to any adherence associated with the apprehension of true existence. This profound meaning of not unsuitable to meaning is not unsuitable to become the object of any. So it's almost commenting that it seems that shows the subtle emptiness. This Brahma meaning is not unsuitable to become an object of any mind whatsoever. Rather, it can be settled by means of a pure view and can be made the object of a mind by meditating on the pure meaning. Therefore, it is also not an emptiness that cannot be practiced at the time of the path or one with nothing to see or realize. Well, then, if the ascertainment of reflections and so forth is empty of what they appear to be with the realization that their inherent existence does not exist, the absence of inherent existence would be realized by the direct perceivers of normal beings. So the latter would the latter would be areas. Otherwise, how could these be suitable analogies for the substance of inherent existence? 400 stanzas says, it is explained that the seer of one thing is seer of everything. What is the emptiness of one? It's the emptiness of all. It explains that the seer of the realizer of the emptiness of one thing then realizes the emptiness of others. The realization that the reflection of face is empty of being a face does not in any way damage the object of one's apparential of true existence. That apprehends the reflection to be established by way of its own entity without negation of its object. The emptiness of inherent supplement of the reflection cannot be realized. The fallacious manner of appearing like an illusion. Page 262. If the measure of the object negation explained earlier has not been grasped well, and the object analyzed by means of reasoning and broken up, the thought that object does not exist will first come up. Then the analyzer is also seen like that, and since the ascertainer of his own non-existence is also not an existence, ascertainment in terms of it is this or not that, and not that becomes impossible. Then the vague appearances that arise do so in dependence on the feature, on the failure to differentiate between inherent existence and non-inherent non-existence and mere existence and non-existence. Therefore, such an emptiness is an emptiness that is also destroys interdependence. Hence, even though the vague appearances arise induced by that realization, this is not at all the meaning of being like an illusion. That is why it is not difficult upon recent analysis to think persons and so forth do not in the least have a mode of subsistence established on the top of the objects by way of their own entities. And for the appearance to simply arise vaguely independent on that, something like that occurs to everyone with an interest in Madhyamakatinets who has heard a little bit of Dharma being taught about how there is no inherent existence. However, the difficult point is to achieve certainty. From the bottom, you've heard about negating all inherent existence established by way of their own entity and positing those inherently non-existent persons and so forth as accumulators of karma, experience of effects and so forth. Since that collection of two that enables one to posit them is next to impossible, it is extremely difficult to find a Madhyamaka view. Therefore, as you analyze sessions with analytical reasoning, you do not find production and thereby negate inherent production, but you do not negate every kind of production, cessation, and so forth. If you do, they would become empty of performing any function, like the horns of a rabbit or the son of a barren woman. With respect to what little illusion-like appearance would remain, the fault that all interdependent actions and agents would not have validity is set forth. In 400 verses says, if that were so, how would existence not resemble an illusion? In the commentary, once that which is dependently arisen is seen as what it is, it becomes like an illusory creation, but not like the son of a barren woman. If one were to assert that through this analysis production is negated in every way and that, therefore, the non-production of component phenomena is demonstrated, then they would be not like illusions, but rather something to be examined in terms of the son of a barren woman and the like. For fear of conclusion that the dependently arisen does not exist, we do not compare phenomena with those, but rather with illusions and the like, which do not contradict the dependently arisen. And therefore, upon such thorough analysis, since the inherent existence of things is not established, an illusion-like quality will be left as a damnant for each thing. So, the method in dependence on which things appear like an illusion? Well, then, what do you do for illusory objects to appear without mistake? For example, you see illusory horses and elephants with your eye consciousness and certain with your mental consciousness that no horse and elephant in accordance with the appearance exist. In dependence on that, the ascertainment arises that this appearance of horses and elephants is an illusory or false appearance. Likewise, persons and so forth undeniably appear to your conventional mind while you are certain by means of reasoning consciousness that they are empty of inherent existence established by way of their own entities. In dependence on these two, their attainment arises that the persons are illusory and false appearances. Due to that, if the meditation on space-like emptiness, a meditative enterprise in which not even a mere particle of the object aims for apprehending attributes exists, hits home, an illusion like emptiness will appear as you look at the appearance of objects in their subsequent attainment period after you have arisen from that meditation. Thus, you analyze phenomena a lot with reasoning analyzing whether or not they are established by their own entities, and you generate a very strong certainty that they lack inherent existence. Subsequently, when you look at the appearances that arise, they will appear like illusion. There is no separate method for settling the illusion like emptiness. Therefore, even when engaging in activities on the side of conduct, such as prostrations and contemplations, you should engage in them affected by the sentiment of your analysis, as explained earlier. Thereby, you should train in illusion-like appearance and perform them from within that. Now, once you have trained in it, you will appear like illusions, even through the mere recollection of the view. Put simply, and settling the selflessness of phenomena, page 266. The basic designation of a person, the five aggregates, the six elements, and such as the earth element, the six sense fields, such as the eye, the phenomena, and the emptiness of inherent existence by way of the own entities, the substance of phenomena. Refutation transferring the reasoning explained earlier, and refutation by means of another reasoning not explained earlier. So this gives a separate reasoning of the dependent origination. So for here, we'll move to switch to Lamrim Chemo. Then on page 316, further, Nagarjuna fundamental treatise says, the seventh chapter, His Holiness makes comment, that which is dependently arisen is naturally at peace. Chandragiri's commentary on the Middle Way says, because things arise dependently, these misconceptions cannot bear scrutiny. Therefore, the reasoning of dependent arising cuts all the entanglement of bad views. Accordingly, you use dependent arising as a reason to become a certain that seedlings and such are empty of inherent existence. When you do this, the eradication of all possible misstep is extremely clear in your mind. Hence, we'll say a little about this. In this case, you use an argument based on what others accept. A seedling does not... So the internal experiences, like pain and pleasure, and the external experiences of form and sound and so forth. Comment from His Holiness. When living beings experience or see a phenomena, the comment I think is on that. They do not apprehend it as being set up by the power of mind to which it appears. Rather, they apprehend it as existing just as it appears. That is, existing in an essentially objective manner. This is how intrinsic is superimposed. The presence of such nature in the object is what is meant by essence, intrinsic nature, and autonomous. Thus, if such nature were present, this would contradict reliance upon other causes and conditions. If this were not a contradiction, then it would be impossible to hold that an already existing pot does not need to be produced again from causes and conditions. Accordingly, Aryadeva's 400 stanzas says, that which arises dependently does not exist autonomously. All of these things lack autonomous existence. Therefore, they have no self. So this verse was earlier, His Holiness mentioned it, and saying that you should note these kind of verses and statements from classic sutras. Also, Chandrakirti's commentary on 400 stanzas comments on that passage, that which has its own essence, intrinsic nature, autonomy, or independence from others, is self-existent, and thus is not dependent arising. All compounded phenomena are dependent arisings. Anything that is dependent arising is not dominance, because it is producing dependence upon causes and conditions. These things all lack autonomy, therefore there is no thing which has self, that is intrinsic nature. Autonomous means something appears to be intrinsically existent, and when it does so, hence, we take the autonomy to mean that something exists in manner such that it is essentially capable of objectively establishing itself. Page 317. And then just before the last paragraph, before the quotation. And therefore, since emptiness of intrinsic existence refers to the lack of that autonomy just described, rather than to the non-existence of functioning things, you can use dependent arising as a reason to refute intrinsic existence. The earlier citation of Chandrakirti's commentary on the 400 stanzas continues. Therefore, since in this Madhyamaka system to be a dependent arising is to lack autonomy, lacking autonomy is what emptiness means. Emptiness does not mean that nothing exists. Consequently, the view that functioning things do not exist is a mistaken denial of the existence of illusion like dependent arisings, both the pure and the afflicted. Hence, it is not accurate. The view that things intrinsically exist is also inaccurate, because such intrinsic nature does not exist in anything. Thus, Chandrakirti's commentary on the 400 stanzas continues. Therefore, according to this Madhyamaka system, the view that those functioning things do not exist is inaccurate insofar as it mistakenly denies the functioning of dependent arising and of illusion-like causes, both the pure and afflicted, because they do not intrinsically exist. The view that things intrinsically exist is also inaccurate. Therefore, for those who claim that things have intrinsic nature, dependent arising does not exist, and the falls of the views of permanence and annihilation ensue. Therefore, those who wish to be free from the views of permanence and annihilation should assert both the lack of intrinsic existence and the illusion-like dependent arising of both pure and afflicted phenomena. Objection: if you use functional dependent arisings to refute autonomy and say that lacking autonomy means being an dependent arising, then how will you refute us? For we, the Buddhists also assert functional dependent arisings, therefore there is no difference between you and us. Reply: although you assert dependently arisen cause and effect, you are like a small child apprehending a reflection of a face as truly being a face. You reify dependent arising as intrinsically existent and then call that the essence of the things. Thus, you do not accurately know the meaning of the dependent arising, and you express its meaning inaccurately, since you hold that dependent arising lack intrinsic existence, and say so. That is the difference between you and us. Accordingly, Chandrakirti's commentary on the 400 stanzas says, continues, quam, if lacking autonomy means to be dependent arising, then how will you refute us? What difference is there between you and us? Reply: I will explain this. You do not understand how to know or to express the meaning of dependent arising accurately. That is the difference. By reifying a reflection as a truth, a young pre-verbal child obviates its actual nature, emptiness. When the child thinks of the reflection and its nature, those ideas about the reflection are ignorant ones. Similarly, you assert dependent arising, but while dependent arisings, reflections, are empty of intrinsic nature, you do not understand their nature accurately. This is because you do not apprehend what lacks in intrinsic nature as lacking intrinsic nature. You reify an essence that does not exist into an essence that does exist. You also do not understand how to express the meaning of dependent arising, because you do not say that it is the absence of intrinsic existence, and because you call it the essence of things. While we and they are alike in asserting the dependent arising of cause and effect, the difference is that we understand and they do not understand how to know and to express dependent arising accurately in terms of intrinsic nature and its absence. The advocates of... So page 319, the verse at the end, whatever is produced from the conditions is produced, it is not intrinsically produced. Whatever depends on conditions, I consider empty. One who knows emptiness is diligent. The first two lines mean that production from conditions entails not meaning intrinsically produced. The third line states that dependent arising, which is reliant on conditions, is the meaning of the emptiness of intrinsic existence. The fourth line indicates the benefit of knowing benefit in this way. Similarly, that sutra says that by knowing dependent arising, you cut off extreme conceptions. The learned will know dependent arising, dependently arisen phenomena, and avoid extreme views. Moreover, if things were essentially or intrinsically existent, the conqueror and his disciples would have to have seen them in that way, but they did not. So yet, on page 320, yet I am wary of becoming long-winded and will not elaborate. Just before the next topic, how to eliminate obscurations by becoming accustomed to those views. Grace for the tea. There will be no... please listen to this announcement. There will be no Lamrim teachings tomorrow morning or afternoon. Tomorrow, the 10th of December, is the 23rd anniversary of the conferment of the Nobel Peace Prize to His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Beginning 9 a.m., in the courtyard of Tepung Losaling, there will be speeches by His Holiness and other dignitaries. An award will be presented to His Holiness by the Gelug tradition of Tibetan Buddhism in recognition of his extraordinary contribution to humanity. The program will may be translated, so everyone is welcome to attend. So tomorrow is the 23rd anniversary of the conferment of Nobel Peace Prize to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and therefore at 9 o'clock in the morning, there will be speech by His Holiness and other dignitaries in the courtyard of Tepung Losaling. An award will be presented to His Holiness by the Gelug tradition of Tibetan Buddhism in recognition of his extraordinary contribution to humanity. So everyone is welcome.
Middle and Lamrim. Page number 266. Refutation by means of another reasoning not explained earlier. This is 2 points presenting the argument of interdependence, how non-products are also established as non-truly existent through these and earlier reasonings. Presenting the argument of interdependence. With regard to the argument of interdependence, it says in the sutra requested by Sagaramati, those which originate independently do not exist by way of their entity. Inherent establishment is clearly refuted with the sign of dependent arising. In the sutra requested by Naga King Navadatta, it also clearly says, whatever is born from conditions is not born. It is not born by way of its entity. Whatever depends on condition is said to be empty. Whoever has realized emptiness is conscientious. As it is stated in the Heart Sutra, that the five aggregates are not existing by its own nature. So rather than saying they are not existing, it has been referred to as not existing by its nature. So there is a distinction here. The meaning of what the first line refers to as not born is explained by the second line saying, not born by way of its entity. Therefore, all qualification of the object of negation is applied to the refutation of birth. In the Descent to Langa Sutra, quoted in Chandrakriti's clever words, it also says, thinking of their not being born inherently, I said all phenomena are unborn. For fear that without a qualification having been made, his statements that birth does not exist could be held to indicate that all birth whatsoever is non-existent, the teacher himself took up the thought of sutras and explained the meaning to be non-existent of inherent birth. Then the third line says that dependence and reliance on condition is the meaning of being empty of establishment by way of one's own entity. This indicates the emptiness of inherent establishment is the meaning of dependent arising, whereas an emptiness of performing functions that will negate mere birth is not. In the root text on wisdom, it also says that which arises in dependence is inherently pacified. By reason of arising dependently, it is pacified or empty of establishment by way of its entity. You should note that whatever obscure fabrications have been propounded, that because of dependent arising itself, the Madhyamika system must profound non-arising and so forth, are thereby cleared away. Page number 268. The argument of dependent arising, which is like that, is praised very much in the sutra requested by Naga King Anabhadabda. It says, experts see dharmas arise in dependence. They do not at all depend on extreme views. Through realizing dependent arising as it is, one does not depend on views holding to extremes. The meaning of this is set forth in the commentary on Middle Way. Such things arise in utter mutual dependence. These conceptions cannot be imputed. Through this reasoning of dependent arising, the net of all bad views is therefore cut. This is the unexcelled distinguishing feature of Mahatma Nagarjuna, the father and his spiritual son. That is why from among various reasoning, I will describe that of dependent arising here. Here the dependence refers to being dependent on parts. Page number 269. Through this, you should understand that since persons and parts and like are also imputed, in dependence on their own collections of parts, they do not have inherent establishments. Those are the two presentations of the argument of dependent arising. So since they are dependent to each other, so there is no existence which exists by itself or without in relation to the other. In the root text on wisdom, it says, whatever arises dependent on something is not that thing for a while, neither is it that other than that. Hence, it is not annihilated nor permanent. And in the praise of Transcendent One, it says, logicians assert that suffering is created by itself or other, or by both itself and other, or that it is without cause. You said that it arises dependently, that which arises in interdependence is asserted by you as empty. Things do not exist independently. That's your matchless lion's roar. Through the argument of dependent arising, the apprehensions of oneness and difference of the extremes of permanence and annihilation and of the four extremes of origination are thus said to be refuted. Having thus induced certainty through the emptiness that is being empty of all the focal objects of an apprehension of signs, one does not give up one's assentiment of the relation between actions and their effects. The reliance on discarding non-virtues and adopting virtues due to that is highly praised. In Essay on the Mind of Enlightenment, it says, relying on actions and their effects, while knowing this emptiness of phenomena, this is more wonderful still than the wonderful. This is more marvelous still than the marvelous. These are 6 points. For that to happen, it is necessary to differentiate between inherent existence, mere existence, non-existent by way of one character, and non-existence. It is as stated in the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the Middle Way, what wise person, while knowing the presentation of causes and effects, reflections without inherent existence, will observe to merely exist those forms, feelings and so forth that do not exist other than as causes and conditions, and thereby is certain them as possessing inherent existence. Therefore, although observed to exist, they do not inherently arise. If you do not differentiate between these four, things will exist by way their own entity as soon as they exist, and they will be non-existent as long as they do not exist by way of their own entity. You will not move beyond the two extremes of superimposition and deprecation. In the commentary on 400 stanzas, it says, according to those who propound that real substantial things exist as long as a thing exists, so long on an own entity exists in accordance with it, whereas when it is rid of its own entity, then the thing will no longer exist in any way and will therefore resemble a donkey's horn. Therefore, since they do not pass beyond propounding those two, all their assertions only mesh with difficulty. This being so, you are freed from all extremes of existence through the absence of existence by way of an own entity, and within that from all extremes of non-existence through the ability to posit causes and effects without inherent existence. With regard to extreme, it says in reasoning for detailed explanations, Thai is used for finish, for end, nearness, direction, and the lower. Such extremes are indeed asserted in our system as well. However, as for the extremes that are places where the so-called view free from extreme goes wrong, it sees an illumination of the middle way. If there were in the Madhyamaka any ultimate thing at all, an object of the mind with its own entity by nature, then since it will exist for that system, how could the strong adherence thinking it is permanent or it is impermanent be an extreme? It is unreasonable to say that proper mental attention in accordance with the suchness of things is a position one falls to. As stated here, mental attention in accordance with how an object actually is not in position one will fall to, so it does not constitute holding to an extreme. In the world, the edge of an abyss is called tha, and falling off it is called thalalung. Likewise, the apprehension of phenomena as truly existent, an apprehension that nothing at all is established or exists, constitute the thalalung of permanence and annihilation, which are opposites of the correct fact. On the other hand, the apprehensions that phenomena do not ultimately exist when we refer to the things as having its own entity, it is due to their conditions, their production and causes. For the impermanent things like sky, there is nothing to explain for them. This is why in refuting objections, it says the lack of inherent existence inverted is establishment as inherent. That is, if something is not ultimately non-existent, it ultimately exists also. The non-assertion of conventionalities, that is not what we explain. In 70 stanzas on emptiness, it says, depending on this that arises, this worldly mode was not refuted. Therefore, the difference made between the two, that thing is not existent. And it exists at opposed to, it does not exist, and it is non-existent, is nothing more than a difference in the way of expressing it. Yet in the manner the two appear to the mind, there is no difference whatsoever, however much you analyze. Therefore, it is nothing more than a fixation on mere words to profound that one falls or does not fall to extremes through that manner of expression. how non-products are also established as non-truly existent through this and early reasonings. Once compounded phenomena, persons and phenomena have thus been established as not truly existent by way of reasonings explained earlier. It is established with little difficulty that uncompounded phenomena such as space, analytical cessations, non-analytical cessations, and suchness do not truly exist. With that intention, it says in root text on emptiness, compounded phenomena are not established, so how could the uncompounded be? An easy method for establishing this is as follows. When inherently established compounded phenomena have been refuted as above, even though they are not inherently established, it is established with that regard to them agents and action, such as bondage and liberation, causes and effects, objects of comprehension, and those who comprehend them may be posited. When that is established, so when we explain about being self-empty, so it doesn't mean that, for example, a pot is being empty of itself, that the pot is not itself. So it shows that the meaning of being self-empty or empty by itself, it means the pot doesn't have its own real or reality. Those who assert them as truly existent, page number 272, second paragraph, those who assert them as truly existent must and do indeed also assert presentations of their definitions and definenda, their causes of separations and effects of separation, their comprehension by such and such valid cognitions, and so forth. At that point, if they do not relate them to their respective objects of attainment, characteristics, comprehenders, and so forth, they cannot refute that all unrelated things become definitions and definenda of each other and the like. If they assert relations, they cannot posit them, since something truly existent, inherently established, cannot depend on something else. Page number 274. In 60 stanzas of reasoning, it also says, conditioned existence and nirvana, neither of these two exist. Through knowledge of existence, that is what is expressed by nirvana. This is an explanation that both existence and peace do not inherently exist, and that nirvana is posited as the very object of the knowledge that an inherently established existence does not exist. So how could this be a position that assures emptiness, the non-true existence of psychic existence, as a nihilistic emptiness? The meaning of the scriptural passage from praise of the spirit of reality too is in order to avert the apprehension of things that truly existent, the root of all other mental afflictions. The sutras teaching emptiness, the absence of inherent establishment, teach that the referent object of that apprehension does not exist. They do not teach that emptiness does not exist. So the nirvana, or the truth of cessation, has been referred to as the ultimate truth. But in terms of the truth of cessation or nirvana, whether it is a moksha or it is considered as an emptiness, it has to be debatable. Although emptiness exists, it is not truly established. That is why this scriptural passage serves as a source of refuting the prepositions. The emptiness that negates the object of negation, true existence, does not exist either, and in order to abandon all the mental afflictions, it is not necessary to realize emptiness, the ultimate suchness. In fact, it says in that very praise, impermanence, emptiness, and suffering, those three serve to cleanse the mind. The teaching that serves to cleanse it best is the absence of inherent existence, and the lack of inherent existence of dharmas, meditate on it as expense of reality. The fact that this phenomena lack an inherent established inherent existence is said to be the expense of reality, which is the object of meditation, and just meditation on that is said to be the best purifier of the mind. Therefore, how could it be suitable to interpret this as the position that emptiness, that is the absence of inherent establishment of phenomena appearing inherently established, is a nihilistic emptiness, and that therefore a truly established emptiness separate from it should be posited as the emptiness that is the object of meditation. That is like promoting that when it comes to eliminating the suffering of fear arising from apprehending a snake in the east, even though there is none, showing that there is no snake in the east will not serve as an antidote, but that rather one needs to show that there is a tree in the west. This is because one will propound that when it comes to eliminating the suffering of sentient beings as the attitude to true existence with regard to what appears truly existent, the realization that basis with regard to which there is apprehension of true existence, like true existence, will not serve as an antidote, but that rather one needs to show some other useless basis to be truly existent. Presentation of conventional and ultimate truths, the basis from which two truths are divided. Earlier scholars had many ways of asserting the basis of division of the two truths. However, here the objects of knowledge are the basis of division because in the compendium of training it says objects of knowledge are also exhausted as this conventional and ultimate truths. According to the fundamental treatise on the middle way, which says worldly conventional truths and ultimate truths, objects of knowledge are divided into two, conventional and ultimate truth. So from here, the concept of two noble truths. Page number 276, explaining the meaning of individual divisions. Conventional truths. Explaining the meaning of words conventional and truth. Page number 277. In clear words, three meanings for the conventional are explained: conciliars of suchness, mutually dependent objects, and worldly designations. The latter are said to have the characteristics of objects of expression and means of expression, numbers and objects of knowledge, and so forth. So they are not just subjective designations, that is, consciousness and expressions. Also, objects of knowledge and objects of expression should not all be held to be conventional truths. In this regard, the convention, which is the concealing consciousness in whose perspective form and the like is posited as truly existent, is the first of the three. In fact, it is ignorance superimposing on phenomena that they have their own inherently established entity which does not exist. This is because true establishment is in fact impossible, which is why the positing of objects as truly existent is in the mental perspective. In a mental perspective that does not apprehend true existence, there is no positing objects as truly existent. That being so, it says in the commentary on Middle Way, delusion is a concealer, for it obscures nature. Its fabrications made to seem truly existent were called conventional truths by the capable one, and fabricated things he called conventions. In the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary in the middle way, it says, in this way, conventional truths are posited for the time being under the power of afflicted ignorance, which is included in the limbs of existence. For hearers, solitary realizers, and bodhisattvas who have abandoned afflicted ignorance and who see composed things as resembling the existence of mirror images and the like, they are fabricated natures rather than truths because they do not execute them as truly existent. To children, they are deceptive, but to others, they are mere conventionalities due to their independent arising similar to that of illusions and the like. This statement does not indicate that whatever conventional truths are posited as existent, they are posited as existent due to ignorance, nor does it indicate that in the perspective of the minds of hearers, solitary realizers and bodhisattvas who have abandoned afflicted ignorance, conventional truths are not posited. The reason for the first point is that, as explained earlier, afflicted ignorance is the apprehension of true existence, which is why the object it apprehends does not even exist conventionally. Whatever is a conventional truth necessarily exists conventionally. Therefore, if something is conventional in the sense of a basis for presenting phenomena as conventionally existent, it must be something that is not taken as conventional with regard to afflicted ignorance. The reason for the second point is that those who have abandoned the conventionality of afflicted ignorance do not have the conventionality of adherence to true existence in whose perspective true existence is posited. That is the reason why composed things are established as untrue in their perspective. But it does not establish that they are not conventional truths. Consequently, the statement that in their perspective composed things are mere conventions means that for them, from among the two components, conventional and truth cannot be posited. So the word mere eliminates truth, but not conventional truth. The intention of setting for the two mere conventions and conventional truths should be understood like that. In clear words, it says that which is a truth for the world in a concealing manner is a worldly conventional truth. This is explained in explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the Middle Way. That which appears truly existent and inherently separate due to a concealer while not existing, inherently is true for worldly mistaken concealer. Therefore, it is a worldly conventional truth. In accordance with this clear statement, worldly conventional truths should be understood as truths for the concealer, which is the ignorance explained earlier. They should not be understood as truly established conventionally, because otherwise it will contradict a system in which establishment by way of own and character is impossible even conventionally. Also, the refutation of true existence and existence of the lack of true existence are performed conventionally. The explanation by Master Jnanagarbha of abidance as conventionally true should also be understood in this manner. Now then, one may think that for a concealer apprehending the true existence, reality and the two selves are truth, therefore they will be truths for a concealer. If that which is merely true for a concealer apprehending true existence were posited as a truth for a concealer, such would indeed be the case. However, that has not been propounded. It was merely explained for what concealer the truth of the conventional truth is a true convention, and how it is true for that, the definition of a conventional truth. Each and every external and internal phenomenon has both a conventional and an ultimate nature. More specifically, if this is illustrated with regard to a sprout, for example, they are the sprout's nature found by reasoning consciousness that perceives the meaning of suchness, a true object of knowledge, and the sprout's nature found by unconventional consciousness that comprehends a deceptive object, a false object of knowledge. The former is the nature of the sprout's ultimate truth, and the latter is the nature of the sprout's conventional truth. In accordance with that, it says in the commentary in the Middle Way, two natures of all things are apprehended by seeing what is real and what is deceptive. The objects of seeing the real were thought to be suchness. Deceptive objects seen are conventional truths. This indicates that with respect to the sprout's nature, there are two natures, the two truths. The ultimate nature is found by former consciousness, and the conventional nature is found by the latter. One single nature of the sprout is two truths in dependence on the former and latter. Consciousness is not indicated. In the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the Middle Way, it says, two aspects of the own nature of all things have been taught. They are conventional and ultimate. It is saying that the natures of each and everything, having been divided into two, the ultimate ones are found by consciousness. Consciousnesses that perceive the real meaning, and the conventional ones are found by consciousnesses that see what is false. Conventional truths are not really true, but merely true in the perspective of the apprehension of true existence. Therefore, in order to ascertain their meaning isolates, it is necessary to ascertain them as deceptive. In order to ascertain a basis of characteristics, for instance, a pot as a false object, a deceptive object of knowledge, it is necessary to acquire a view with regard to that basis that negates the different object apprehended as true by means of a reasoning consciousness. This is because a falsity is not established by valid cognition without its truth having been negated by reasoning. Although a pot, a woolen cloth, and so forth are the conventional truths, when they are being established by a mind, the mind does not need to establish the meaning of conventional truth. Likewise, although pots, woolen clothes, and so forth are not inherently existent and accordingly illusion-like in their appearance, the minds that establish them need not establish their meaning of being illusion-like. That is why it is inadmissible to propound that in this system parts, woolen clothes, and so forth are posited as conventional truth for the consciousnesses of ordinary beings without the mathematical view, and that they are posited as ultimate truths from the Arya's point of view. That will be the opposite of what is set forth in the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the Middle Way. That is to say, something that is ultimate for ordinary being is a mere conventionality for Aryas with sphere of activity involving appearance. Ordinary beings apprehend pots and the likes are truly existent. And precisely that is the apprehension of ultimate existence in relation to their consciousness. Pots and the like are therefore ultimately established rather than being conventional objects. Their basis that for them are ultimately established parts and the like are conventionalities in relation to the vision of exalted wisdom in the continuum of an Arya which comprehends illusion-like appearances. Since they cannot be posited as true in relation to that consciousness, they are said to be mere conventionalities. Since their nature is thus said to be an ultimate truth, you should discriminate and say that parts and like are conventionalities and their nature is ultimate for Aryas. You should not propound that pots and like ultimates for Aryas. This is because their reasoning consciousness, seeing the meaning of reality, does not find pots and the like. And because that which is founded by reasoning consciousness, seeing the meaning of reality, is said to be the meaning of an ultimate truth. Divisions of conventionalities. The Sautantrika Madhyamikas ascertain that consciousness, which appears to be established by way of its own character, exists just as it appears. Therefore, they do not distinguish between real and wrong subjects, but instead distinguish whether the appearances of objects do or do not exist by way of their own character in accordance with how they appear. They assert this in accordance with the following statement in Janagarbha's distinguishing two truths. They seem the same, but since some can and some cannot fulfill a function, a distinction is made between real and unreal conventionalities. This system asserts that whatever appears to be ignorant as established by way of its own character is an appearance of that consciousness polluted by ignorance. Therefore, the conventional objects are not distinguished as the two, real and wrong. Now it says in the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the Middle Way, whatever is false, even conventionally, is not a conventional truth. For the worldly conventional consciousness of someone, conventional, valid, I think page number 281. Conventional valid cognition does not establish the opposite of, for instance, one of the two apprehensions of persons and phenomena established through their own character, the mode of apprehension arising from the minds being temporarily polluted by one's own bad tenets. This is an exception. Moreover, although dualistic appearances occur for the exalted wisdom, knowing the varieties free from all causes of pollution, by predispositions of ignorance, it is not mistaken with regard to its appearing objects. The reason is explained elsewhere. Page number 282, Ultimate Truths, explaining the meaning of ultimate and truth. In clear words, it says, it is an object and it is ultimate, therefore it is the ultimate object. Since it is true, it is the ultimate object true. This asserts that both ultimate and object apply to the ultimate object truth. The way in which an ultimatum truth is true is its non-deceptiveness. Specifically, it does not deceive the world, abiding in one way and appearing in a different way. In the commentary on 60 stanzas of reasoning, it says that an ultimate truth is merely posited as existent by power of worldly conventions. That being so, the meaning of both truth and conventional truth, which is truth in the perspective of the apprehension of truth existing, the truth of ultimate is also not something which exists by its own reality. Even though the truth of ultimate is referred to as ultimate, but it does not have an intrinsic nature of existence. The definition of an ultimate truth, the actual definition. The definition of an ultimate truth is as explainable in the commentary on the Middle Way. It is said to be that which is found by seeing the meaning of a real object of knowledge. In the commentary on that, it says that is to say the ultimate gains its own entity through being the object of the special exalted wisdom of those who perceive reality. But it is not established by way of its own selfhood. This is one nature. It is said to be found by uncontaminated exalted wisdom comprehending suchness and not to be established by way of its own entity. So the prepositions that something is established is as truly existent, if found by uncontaminated meditative equipoise, is being refuted. The word special exalted wisdom indicates that what is found by any wisdom of an Arya is not sufficient, and that instead only what is found by a special exalted wisdom, the exalted wisdom that knows the mode, is an ultimate truth. The meaning of found is established as such by that consciousness. Like with conventionalities. The nature page number 283, the last part in the commentary on 60 senses of reasoning, it says, is a nirvana also a conventional truth? It is so. So His Holiness refers here that the nirvana is actually a conventional truth, but therefore nirvana is only imputed as a conventional truth. Those statements mean that positing a nirvana, an ultimate truth that exists, also implies positing it as merely existent in the perspective of a conventional consciousness. It's a conventional truth. They do mean that this system assesses a nirvana as a conventional truth, because that same commentary also explained that the three truths are conventional truths and that nirvana is an ultimate truth. In the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the Middle Way, and the other three truths are also set forth as conventional truths and the truth of cessation as an ultimate truth. And in response to the objection that if a nirvana were posited as conventionally existent, this would contradict the statement that it is an ultimate truth. It says that it was taught as conventionally the truth only by worldly designations. Therefore, everything posited as existent is posited by power of worldly designations. In the Sutra of Perfection of Wisdom, in 100,000 verses, it says, all these phenomena are labeled in dependence on worldly designations. They are not ultimate. And in 70 stanzas on emptiness, it also says, abidance, production, destruction, existence, non-existence, or low, equal, special, were taught by Buddha by power of worldly terms and not by the power of reality. In other words, all the various presentations of production, destruction, and abidance, low, supreme, and intermediate, this exists and this doesn't exist, that the victor taught were taught is merely posited by the power of worldly designations. He said that they were not posited by power of appreciating real abidance, that is not merely posited by power of designations. Master Janagarbha explains, since it is a truth for an ultimate consciousness, it is an ultimate truth. He thereby also explains that a reasoning consciousness is ultimate, and thus says that what is non-deceptive, for it is the truth. However, the intended meaning is not truly existent in terms of bearing analysis, because in that text the true establishment of all phenomena is refuted. Therefore, we assert the preposition, if the ultimate way, not true for an ultimate consciousness. The conventional would not be true for a conventional consciousness. However, to propound that if the former were not established for the former, the latter would not be established for the latter, is to say that if the negation of a truth were not truly established, the phenomena that are basis for the negation would be truly established. This is because an ultimate truth is posited as the mere negation of true existence in the phenomena that are basis of the negation, and because to suggest that phenomena are not conventionally established is to suggest that they are not falsely established. Thus, it will be totally incoherent, because it is due to the very fact that the appearing phenomena which do not exist in a truly established way are not established as truly existent, that the basis of negation must be established as falsities. Therefore, although for something to be posited as conventionally existent, it need not be established by a reasoning consciousness of suchness, it must not be damaged by any valid cognition, that is, by a conventional or reasoning consciousness. The commentary on the 60 stanzas of reasoning explains that since the appropriated aggregates conventionally abide as the four, impermanent and so forth, the apprehension of the four is unmistaken in relation to that, and since the aggregates do not abide even conventionally as the four, permanent and so forth, the apprehension of those four is mistaken in relation to that. In the commentary on the middle way, it says, the self is imputed by the Tridikas, carried away by the Dobro of unknowing, and what is imputed to magical displays and illusions does not even exist from a worldly perspective. This has already been explained in detail elsewhere. There is quite a lot. So we will stop here today. So today, the tune is not necessary, just say the lineage prayer, the stages of Bhad prayer by words. I repeat the announcement once again. There will be no Lamrim teachings tomorrow morning or afternoon. Tomorrow, 10th December, is the 23rd anniversary of the conferment of Nobel Peace Prize to His Holiness the Dalai Lama. In the morning, around 9 a.m. in the courtyard of Dibanglo Siling, there will be speeches by His Holiness and by Indian and Tibetan representatives. An award will be presented to His Holiness by Gelugpa tradition of Tibetan Buddhism in recognition of his extraordinary contribution to humanity. The program will be translated, so everyone is welcome to attend. And there is one Samsung mobile phone. The model number is DOPODA3288. A Samsung mobile phone, DOPODA3288.
Samsung camera.
Oh, sorry. There was Samsung camera and also Samsung mobile phone. Model number DOPODA3288 is being left in Ganden, during the teaching in Ganden, and it is with the two disciplinarians master here. So it seems that this belongs to someone from China or some Chinese. So please, if anyone has lost a Samsung mobile and camera, so please contact the disciplinarian master. By accumulating through long effort, the two collections as vast as the sky may have become the chief of the conquerors, guide of all beings whose mind are blinded by ignorance. Also, in all lives until I reach that point, may Manjugosha look after me with loving kindness. After I find the supreme path complete in the stages of teaching, by accomplishing it, may I please the conquerors. By skill in means inspired by strong loving kindness, may the vital points of the path that I precisely know clear away the mental darkness of beings. May I then uphold the conquerors' teachings for a long time. In regions where the supreme precious teachings have not spread, or where it is spread but then declined, may I illuminate the treasure of happiness and benefit with a mind deeply moved by great compassion. May the sruttis on the stages of Bhattu enlightenment, may well founded on the wondrous deeds of the conquerors and their children, bring glory to the minds of those who want to be free and long preserve the conquerors' achievements. As for all who provide conditions that support integration of the good path and clear away conditions that inhibited that integration, whether they're human or not, may they never be separated in all their lifetimes from the pure path praised by the conquerors. When I strive to properly achieve the supreme vehicle through the 10 days of the teaching, may I be accompanied always by those who have power, may an ocean of good fortune pervade all directions. The prayer of the words of truth. Magnificent masters of an ocean of limitless good qualities, those gone to bliss of the three realms, your children and disciples looking upon destitute microbes like your only child, please pay attention to my true words of sorrow. Expand the doctrine of the completely perfect capable one, which removes the sufferings of sightly existence and solitary peace for abundant, extensive welfare and happiness in Jambudeva, increases the 10 kinds of Dharma contact of all those learned and accomplished holders of the doctrine, by pacifying all the unbearable dangers of sickness, weapons, and famine, cause those microbes totally compelled by intolerable strong karma, stricken by the torture of sufferings without respite, to recover their breath in an ocean of happiness and joy. Particularly for all the microbial beings in the religious snowland, oppressed with evil actions by the barbarian hordes of the black side, devoid of love, may your power of compassion arise and quickly stop the flow of blood and tears. May all the unruly groups of people maddened by the demon of afflicted emotions, who by their rough behavior rend themselves and others, fully obtained which sees their object of compassion and obtain magnificent love, kindness, and affection. The wish that since long time dwells in our heart is the glorious complete freedom for the entire Tibetan country, best assuming the fortune to enjoy the celebration of spontaneous religious and secular harmony, by the interdependence of the profound suchness of appearance and emptiness, by the power of the three sublimes, compassion and the force of truth, by the power of the truth of infallible action and reason, may our prayer of truth be fulfilled soon and without obstacle.